What's up, sports aficionados? Changing it up a little bit this week. Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. I'm King Kaz, joined as I am always by my good friend, co-host, the one, the great, JVZ.
Thank you, Kaz. It's, I don't know, feels like somewhat of a slow news week a little bit. Yeah. I shouldn't say that because it's a little disrespectful to some of these sports, but it's
it's relatively been quiet. We've had some big bumps. We had a soccer game where people walked off the field. That was fun. Nothing we haven't talked about before with European soccer and their ever growing fight of racism. We've had some weird contract shit going on that we're going to talk about, and a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. I think I always, as much as we try to make this a sports show that covers a bunch of different sports, I still think of sports like just in the context of basketball. And if basketball things aren't happening, then it's slow news week. But there's plenty of stuff happening, and and we'll start this off with the finals of the MLS Cup. The Columbus Crew are your new MLS champions, and soundly defeating the Seattle Sounders 3-0 in the final, and despite having missing two key players, Darlington Nagbe and Pedro Santos, due to COVID. And I think I watched this entire match on Fox, and it was pretty exciting, a pretty hefty domination by Columbus, is kind of surprising for a final. I think you kind of expect them to be pretty even, but Columbus came out and got two goals in the first half, and pretty quickly, I think within the first 30 minutes, and then Seattle kind of got it together a little bit in the second half and mounted some sort of an attack, but then they got countered, and so Seattle ended up winning, or sorry, Columbus ended up winning 3-0. Lucas Zelarayan was the MVP. We got with two goals and one assist, so he's Columbus's designated player, so definitely justifying the money that they spent on him. I think the broadcast, which was helpful for me because I'm not an avid MLS watcher, but the broadcast was heavily emphasizing the fact that that Columbus was a founding team. They had actually fought off, like the city had fought off relocation like 2 years ago. The original ownership group was looking to sell the team, and they were purchased by Jimmy Haslam's group, who is the owner of the Cleveland Browns. Mm-hmm. And they were actually emphasizing like how this was back when the Browns were in the middle of their really, really, really long losing streak. The season before, they had gone 0-16, and then they had just finally won their first game after that. And I think it was Baker Mayfield's first start where they got that first win in a really long time. Or not his first start, but I think he came in as a backup and they got that first win after a long time. And so everybody in the ownership group was in a good mood. And then they and then they ended up buying the Columbus Crew. And 2 years later, they are now champions.
So, I mean, it kind of goes to show this is one of those things where sometimes where like a group kind of owns multiple things, and you see, you kind of see the groundwork of good things coming, right? So the changes that the Browns have made, you see the changes that the Columbus Crew have made and are trying to get better, to the point where they won a championship. But like, it makes you excited if you're deep enough, if you kind of are reading into the cards enough that you think the other things they own are going to kind of go that same route, you know, like you're like, oh, They put enough investment into this team, and look what happened. Maybe they'll do the same with the other properties they own.
Yeah. And I don't think they were expecting everything to play out like this quickly, but the other thing that they were trying to emphasize on the broadcast is like a lot of the recent champions, I think dating back to 2015, I think they're all like newer teams, newer expansion teams. Like the MLS has heavily tried to expand into the Pacific Northwest and then other, I don't want to say necessarily say smaller cities, but
other regions and grow and kind of get to a fuller team rosters.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Seattle. Players, but more teams in the pool.
Yeah. And for a while that emphasis was on teams without a whole lot of other sports. I think like expanding into Seattle kind of worked, even though they have plenty of other sports, but they had just lost the Seattle Supersonics. So the Seattle Sounders were able to get a strong foothold. And then from there, Portland, Vancouver, and then recent expansions into Minnesota and Miami, with pretty strong fan bases. I know Sacramento's got a team coming soon, mm-hmm. Seattle and Portland won a couple championships, and Atlanta, which was a recent expansion team, won a recent championship. So it's just like all these new teams are winning the championships, and like, what about the old founding teams? And you have to go back to 2014 where the LA Galaxy won that year, to find an MLS.
Was that
champion.
When they had David Beckham?
I think
Beckham
that was when they had David Beckham. Yeah.
Yeah. David Beckham. They had a few other people on that team. It was a pretty good roster.
Yeah, Landon Donovan, and it was a pretty stacked team, I believe. You have to. It's kind of good to see like some of the old teams still healthy, between them and DC United and some of that old guard. Like half of them have moved to other cities.
Mm-hmm.
So Columbus was on the verge of that a couple of years ago, but now it's good to see like, one of the originals, it's good to show that like one of the originals can revitalize themselves and still stay competitive among all these newfangled upstart teams.
All right, so let's go from there. Let's talk about a little bit of actual team movement that is going on. The Utah Royals are going to be moving to Kansas City. And there's a little bit, and then this isn't just like kind of an expansion move. This is kind of a holistic move, so to speak.
Yeah, so this is in the NWSL, but it's going to affect the MLS as well, because the Utah Royals and then their corresponding MLS team Real Salt Lake and then their USL affiliate, or not affiliate, but I guess they're an affiliate if they're owned by the same group, but USL's Real Monarchs, all playing in the Salt Lake City area, all of them are going to be sold. They were all owned by I believe it was called Utah Soccer.
Yeah.
The same group led by Delroy Hansen and he and his chief business officer, Andy Carroll, have been accused of racism and sexism and just in general creating a toxic workplace culture. So I think they're being, I don't know if they're being forced to sell or this is just kind of public pressure, but mm-hmm. But they are selling their holdings unfortunately the NWSL was unable to find a Utah based ownership group for the Utah Royals, so they sold it to a group that is going to essentially create an expansion team in Kansas City instead. where the team originally was from. So
that's where that name, that kind of name or origin nates from.
Actually, I don't think so, because Real in like they're going with the Real branding, which is like based on Real Madrid and Real.
I thought it was more the Royals branding. You know what I mean?
It's Spanish for
all right. Yeah. You know what I meant.
Yeah, so it's all it is confusing. So it's not related to the Kansas City Royals, because I feel like that used to be a thing with team naming, where like every team in the city would be named the same thing, and it still is in Europe. Yeah. But now, I feel like now in the U.S.,
it would be like something similar back in the day. Like they would have a kind of like a similar scheme.
Yeah,
like
Seattle does. Kind of,
yeah. And I love that. I love when like teams really kind of buy into it, right? Because then it kind of gives you more of a sense of like the team camaraderie through the city. Because sometimes you look at a team, and you associate that team with where it's from sometimes, and there could be a team from the same city and you don't have that same association, right?
Like the Bears, the Bulls, and the
But like even here, right? You have the Ravens and the Orioles, right? And they call it Birdland,
yeah,
because both their teams are named after birds, right? So when it's kind of more of that whole city camaraderie behind both the teams, you see a lot more Birdland stuff. Even though, like I've said before, they care more about the Ravens than they do the Orioles right now. it's still is that Birdland thing.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's fun, right? Like even though the color schemes are different and you have that, you still have this sense of camaraderie by the teams having a similar mascot and both having birds.
Yeah. But unfortunately, since they weren't able to find ownership in time in Utah, it looks like Utah is losing the team for now. At the very least, they've acknowledged that they're going to keep trying to find ownership in Utah, and when they do, they can.
The part I didn't understand. Right? Is it this team is like in a sense going to be in Kansas City for now, and then would go to Utah later if they found new owners, or would it be like a name switch, kind of like the Colts and the Browns, kind of a thing, or like. Or I mean the Colts, the Ravens kind of thing, like
they've made it very clear that the Royals name kind of stays with Utah, and in 2023 they want to reestablish, like once they find new owners, they can reestablish Utah as an expansion team as the Utah Royals in 2023. Kansas City will stay where they are. They're an expansion team now. They keep like all the assets for the current Utah Royals, but they won't have like the name or anything like that. They'll be a newly branded team. So it'll be more like it would be more like the Browns situation, where they became the Ravens, or that ownership or that franchise became the Ravens, and the Browns name and everything kind of stayed in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And then was reestablished with the expansion team. And then the history of the Browns is tied to the city instead of Art Modell's team, which is now in Baltimore. And it's as if they just had a gap for a while. So I think that's what they're looking to establish here. I don't think this is necessarily an indication of the overall health of the NWSL, which seems to be growing. I think it's more just like this move is somewhat sudden.
I mean, that's why I said it's more of a holistic change than anything else, right? There's just some weirdness here. To quote the kids nowadays, there's some scuffness, there's some weird stuff going on about it that just kind of needs to be fixed. And it's going to seem weird, but that doesn't necessarily take away from the impact that the NWSL is having, right? Yeah. And the expansion that is going on around it, right? It is very much expanding, and it's very much coming to the forefront a lot more, as it should be. But sometimes you have to go through you know, bits of weirdness, right? And you have to go through these things, and you have to fix them, and you have to kind of do them in the right way. And I think right now is the time to do those things, right? You have a bad seed. You might as well get it out now before the crop starts growing and it affects everything else. So I think it's a good idea to do it this way right now.
Yeah, and it looks like they're having an easier time doing it than, you know, than the Atlanta Dream are having with Kelly mm-hmm. Loeffler, or with with like an Echo Fox situation. Mm-hmm. It's
we've seen this situation in so many different ways. So this is like kind of the best version of that situation, right? Because you're not only getting rid of them in your realm, it must be big enough that they've had to move all of their assets, it's looking like. So yeah. It's just like a good purge of bad ownership, which is something that we talk about so much and how hard it is to do. So to be able to do it and do it in a good manner is great.
Yeah. All right. Well, one guy who certainly wishes he could purge his team of bad ownership is James Harden. Although I don't know if you can blame this situation entirely on Tillman Fertitta, but James Harden is now going through the tantrum phase of his off season. I guess he's moved past that a little bit, but he missed the start of training camp to kind of go partying in Vegas, and that along with kind of his trade demands in the off season have reignited a lot of the talk around whether a James Harden trade can get done.
James Harden thinks it can be done.
Yeah. Or he's trying to force his way out, and he still has some time left on his contract. So he doesn't have quite so much leverage there, but he's using whatever leverage he can by, you know, being defiant and not living up to the terms of his contract, which is like, we don't see that a whole lot in the NBA, but in the NFL, like, we see holdouts all the time. When people are dissatisfied with their contracts,
and it's weird, right? Because it does look like, to a certain extent, that like he's being an asshole or something. But it's kind of one of those things where we've talked about how weird some of these contracts can be, and things you can and can't do in some of them, and sometimes there are, like, you know, things like this, like you can't go party somewhere or something, right? Like before certain, you know, before you have to arrive at camp or something. And sometimes people use those little things in their contracts or agreements as leverage, like, oh, you know what? Well, I'm going to go do that thing. How do you feel now? And well,
he's also doing it like he was doing it like when everybody else was showing up and,
It's late. It's definitely a thing of defiance, right? That's definitely what it is. That's definitely what it's meant to be. That's exactly what it is, right? You're using it in a sense of like, no, I'm being defiant. I don't want to deal with you. I'm gonna do what I can to be defiant.
Yeah, and he's breaking the rules very publicly. He's partying in the middle of a pandemic. So now that he's back with the team, he still has to go through COVID protocol, and I think he's got to get like 6 straight negative tests. Mm-hmm. And so meanwhile, the team had a preseason game recently, and the team actually did pretty well without him. John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins signed in Houston. I think we forgot to mention that. So yeah. John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins reunited in Houston. Wall is, you know, that's his first basketball action for a couple of years, and he looks pretty good. DeMarcus Cousins also recovering from an injury. He looks pretty good. And between those guys and newly acquired Christian Wood, like, you know, they have a decent thing going there. But it would be nice to add, from a basketball perspective, to add James Harden to that mix, to add, you know, arguably, you know, the guy who was second in MVP voting last year to the list. But he's not there. And it just seems like everybody else on the team is, like, doesn't really know what's going on, or they're just kind of sick of the whole thing. Like, their response to a lot of the questions about James Harden are kind of just like, you got to go ask him. So it's, you know, he's certainly leaving his team in a bad situation. And he doesn't want to be there. Initially he was trying to force his way to Brooklyn. But he's also recently added, and this is what they always do. Like, whenever they're trying to force a trade, they try to make it look like they're not forcing a trade to one specific spot, and they just want out anywhere. So he's added, you know, Milwaukee and Miami and all these other good teams, contending teams, to his list of possible of desired trade destinations. So of course he's not publicly saying any of this. He's kind of just back channeling all of this through the media. So he can always deny the fact that he ever said this stuff. So it's all kind of it's part of, like, a recent trend of player empowerment, and we were kind of talking about it before the show, about how it's kind of getting tiring to see, you know, between Kawhi Leonard forcing his way out of San Antonio and Anthony Davis forcing his way out of New Orleans, and now James Harden trying to force his way out. Russell Westbrook got his trade demands met. It's like, players do have a lot of power in the NBA. I don't know if they necessarily have too much power. And I don't know if this is necessarily an example of that.
I think it is player dependent, right? Like, and I think it's also agency dependent too, right? I think somebody like LeBron James, for example, right, has kind of infinite power on teams he goes to.
But he's also never, like, he's like the ultimate example of player power, especially since he's, his owner, since Rich Paul and Paul's ownership group also has, signed a bunch of players as well. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like LeBron can move pieces around throughout the league, but he's never actually, he's LeBron James has never forced a trade. He's always left during free agency. Even though technically when he went to Miami the first time, that was a sign and trade, but that was something that he arranged, to make sure Cleveland got something back for, when he left. That was he's never forced his way out. He has, like, the threat of him leaving has influenced front office moves. And you could argue the same thing has happened here with James Harden. Now he's threatening that, like, the only threat he can play is that, he's going to leave in a couple years when his contract is up, and he's done all the moves to signal that, like, he's turned down his, a potential $50 million a year extension for 2 years, which is a lot of money. But he turned that down. So Houston knows, like, if they don't trade him within a couple years, they're going to lose him for nothing. But also, like, Yeah, the last couple years, this entire Houston Rockets team was kind of built around him. So, in a way, he can't really argue that much that the team hasn't at least tried to build a contender around him if
Yeah.
that's what he wants. And it just hasn't worked. So he wants to jump ship, but it's. And he's making a lot of noise, and I guess that's just the nature of, when you're a superstar in the NBA, you are one of five players on the floor. But when you're an MVP potentially in the NBA, you are that important to your team that you can kind of wield this kind of power even by doing things that like I think the Rockets would be within their rights to fine him for this, and say, like, you're not living up to your contract, so we're going to take part of your contract away. But the threat of that is like, you're just going to piss him off even more, and you don't want to lose him.
Right.
So that's kind of the weird player dynamics that happen in the NBA, even though like all these contracts are guaranteed, all this, and, yeah, in the NFL, you see players kind of hold out because that's all they can really do. But then, if they don't show up eventually, they just keep losing money. And in the NBA, if they do that, the teams are still kind of scared to take that money away, and just because they, if the Rockets keep pissing him off, then they know they're going to lose James Harden in a couple of years. So it kind of just puts everybody in a bad situation. And I know a lot of this is caused by the gutting of the front office of this team and the coaching staff. And so I kind of don't blame James Harden for not wanting to be there, but at the same time, he's also getting paid a lot of money to be there, and he signed a 4-year contract.
But I mean, it's one of those things, right? Like, if nothing happens at the start of the actual season, is he going to be there? Yes. Is he going to be happy that he's there? No. Is he going to play to the best of his ability? Hopefully. But it's just one of those things where sometimes you're in a situation that you don't want to be in, and no matter how much those people are offering you, especially when you kind of have a goal in mind, right? Like a lot of the things someone like Jimmy Butler said in a lot of his moving from team to team to team is because his ultimate goal is winning a championship, right? It's not about the amount of money that he earns in playing basketball, right? Does that help? Yeah. Is it helpful? Is that something that he's appreciative of? Yes. But his ultimate goal in his basketball career is to win a championship, and that's what he wants out of it. And a lot of people have very similar goals in the NBA, right? They want to have at least, at in the very least, one championship to their name. And you can see some people go for it more than others, right? Like in the way that they do things, and some people kind of get more. Some people definitely get more enamored in the money and the culture and the fame, but there are just some of those who are literally dedicated to that goal that they have. I see it more in Jimmy Butler than I do in James Harden. I definitely have seen James Harden, at least in the past few years, as somebody who's gone more for the money than the actual want to win a championship. But maybe something's changed in his mind that right now it's like, you know what, this isn't the place that it's going to happen, and I'm going to do whatever I can to get out of it, because it's not going to happen here.
Yeah. And I mean, I would agree with his assessment on that, but at the same time, it's I mean, we've seen Anthony Davis, like, he essentially made it clear that he wasn't going to sign an extension for Supermax money. And so that was his way of signaling that he was going to leave when his contract was up. It's almost like these players make so much money anyways that they're at the point where if they miss out on potentially $50 million or so in lifetime earnings, like it's not going to affect their quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So like it might affect some business opportunities after they retire. But, you know, if, you know, for right now, like if, you know, and for James Harden, he could either sign this $50 million extension with Houston, or if he gets traded somewhere, he could sign a $50 million extension somewhere else. Like the Supermax doesn't apply here. So, at this point for James Harden, it's just, he's playing all the cards he can, even the ones that violate his contract, and even the ones that, you know, that that affect his reputation, because at the end of the day, if you know, this isn't going to affect how much Brooklyn wants him. It's if they have an opportunity to get him, they will. And you know, it's at the point where even Miami is out there denying reports that that certain players are off the table in discussions, in trade discussions. They are basically saying, hey, if you guys want to talk about this trade, we're willing to talk, and don't listen to all this stuff about how, you know, Tyler Hero is not available. Like, everybody's available if you want to give us James Harden. So he's that good of a player that anybody would want to take the risk on him, even if he's acting like a baby right now. Getting a James Harden who wants to be on your team is a good thing. So it's just a matter of who actually has all the assets that would rope, you know, that would be able to provide good return to the Rockets for James Harden. So, you know, Philly, all these other teams are kind of back on the table. We might see. I do think we're going to see James Harden start the season on the Rockets, and then maybe a trade by the deadline or so. He looks like he's willing to make this ugly until that happens.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes you have to, right? It's not always the best,
It's
people
ugly.
Are going to have feelings, but
the, I don't know. I also posed this question on Reddit, and it's kind of got a weird response, but like, so, I mean, there's player empowerment, and some people are saying like, oh, player empowerment has gone too far with this move. And in a way I kind of agree, but then what's the alternative? Like owner empowerment, because that's like the other end of the scale. And like, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for these billionaire owners, especially one like Tillman Fertitta, who has come into the team, who bought an already successful franchise and has now gutted it. And so it's not like James Harden signed up for that when he signed his contract a couple of years ago. So I can see why he's mad, and I can see why he wants to leave. A more professional player would take the approach of like making his trade demand behind closed doors and playing as well as he can so that he has as many possible suitors as possible. And then the team can trade him for a good return. But also like a player doesn't have, like, it doesn't help the player that the team trading for him has to give up a bunch of stuff to get him, because now he's going to a team that's gutted with assets.
Right. Like if the players have no control in where they go, they either go to a terrible team for picks that they're then stuck in for another set of years where the no matter how skilled you are, it's no contest, right? You end up going somewhere where you have to sit, right? And the clock is ticking on your career and your ability to be able to do the things that you can do right now. And the more that clock ticks, the further it puts you in a position where where you have to rely on other people to be able to get you to the place that you need to be. So, you know, that's, you know, because one of the other things you and DJM were talking about before the show was, the super team thing. And I think that's what it is for people, right? It feels safer to link up with these other players who are at the top of their game to give you the better chance of getting that thing that you want, right? Even if it seems a little bit dirty. And I mean, I'm not a super big fan of it, but I understand it, right? I understand that.
It's always happened.
I understand that sense of wanting to win under any circumstance. Right?
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, the Kevin Durant Warriors were kind of the worst part of that, even though, I mean, him joining a 73-win team was like the worst of that. But, I mean, before that, it was LeBron forming the Heatles in Miami. And then, before that, it was Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett getting traded to Boston to join Paul Pierce. And, before that, the Lakers tried to assemble a super team with Shaq, Kobe, Karl Malone, and Gary Payton. And that got beat by a Detroit Pistons team with, I think, without any all-stars on that team. So it's happened before. And this is kind of just the LeBron and Anthony Davis together is kind of the latest iteration of that. I feel like we're at a better situation now because you don't have any big threes out there anymore. You kind of have just a bunch of dynamic duos spread out throughout the league. So I feel like it's more balanced now than ever. But James Harden joining Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant in Brooklyn would definitely throw that out of balance. Or him joining any other team. Like if he goes to Milwaukee and joins Giannis, then that is the two MVP candidates from last year on the same team together. And that's kind of weird.
But it's at the same time, right? Like those things on paper have to translate to things on the court. And we've seen it go that way as well, where you have two great players and they do get together and it just doesn't translate the same. Right. Yeah. Sometimes it also has to just be the right fit. And that's the thing that's hard to predict. Right. A lot of people, and
James Harden is kind of a hard player to fit with since he needs the ball the entire time. It's going to get weird. It hasn't stopped being weird since the offseason started. So it's, just wait and see on the weirdness, but I'm glad the NBA is back. I'm even glad to see Kings basketball, even though they're getting the shit kicked out of them, but at least it's still fun to watch. So preseason games have started. The season's going to start soon. We didn't have to wait long. For the Michigan Wolverines college football team, the season has ended a little bit early. I think they might have another game left, but they canceled their big matchup with Ohio State due to COVID, which I thought this was something that teams were trying to avoid, not the cancellation in general, but I thought like these rivalry games were being moved to the beginning of the season just so that it would be during the part of the season that is least likely to get canceled. But this is a big rivalry game that they have at the end of the season every year, and it's been canceled due to too many COVID cases on the Michigan team, I believe. Mm-hmm. So Ohio State is fine, but they've only played five games. They've won all five, but they didn't meet the number of required games to qualify for the Big Ten title game. But they got a special waiver for that anyways, because they did beat the second place team in their half of the Big Ten. So, which is Indiana, which is who are 6-1. So I think the Big Ten kind of just made a judgment call and said, okay, Ohio State, you're undefeated. So they get to play Northwestern in the title game. And there's just kind of a special exception to the six-game minimum rule to due to COVID circumstances. I think Indiana would have, if they wanted to raise a big stink about this, they, you know, at least from a rules perspective, they have a legitimate grievance here. But they've acknowledged that they did lose to Ohio State, so they probably, so Ohio State probably does deserve to get the spot, but just a lot of people are mad. I figure most of those people are people that just hate Ohio State, but it's, I can kind of see the logic in where they've arrived at this decision. More COVID weirdness. That was a weird start to the weekend, and then a whole slate of games yesterday with some pretty weird endings. The Mid-American Conference title game ended with the Ball State winning 30-27 after Western Michigan, their opponent, they executed a 15 lateral play as time expired. And I watched the video of this play because it was kind of a mess.
Yeah,
to the point where like where the Ball State bench thought that they thought that play ended in the middle of the play and ran onto the field, and the referees hadn't blown the play dead. So everybody kept playing, and Western Michigan eventually scored a touchdown, but one of the laterals on the play was ruled as a forward lateral. So the play was nullified, and Ball State wins. So it looks like they all the entire bench that celebrated prematurely had a legitimate reason to celebrate. Pretty wild play to end that game. And then maybe an even more unexpected finish, but number 6 Florida was upset by LSU after after Marco Wilson, he tackled receiver Cole Taylor. This was on third down, and so that tackle would have made it 4th and 6, but 4th and 6 with 1:51 left on the clock. So LSU would have had to punt the ball to Florida in a tie game. But Wilson, I think he got a little extra with his celebration, and he ripped off Cole Taylor's shoe and chucked it down the field. Nobody really knows why he did that. But due to the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that resulted from that play, due to that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, LSU got second life, and they were able, after they ran 5 more plays, they were able to kick a 57-yard field goal in the fog. And honestly, that is one of the most impressive field goals that I've ever seen as well, because I feel like Cade York, the kicker, could have, like, it was really hard to see the goalposts.
Yeah,
from the video there, and maybe he had a better view of it, but that kind of pressure kick in the fog where you could barely see anything, with time not necessarily running out but close to running out, to win the game against a number 6 Florida team that was making a case for the college football playoff, a big upset win. LSU has lost a bunch of players in the last draft to the NFL, so this was kind of a rebuilding year in a way. Florida, they were ranked number 6. They had a shot at the college football playoffs. They're still going to play Alabama for the SEC title next week, but losing this game really hurts their chances at getting named to one of the 4 spots in the college football playoff. So I think, and really you can trace their loss all the way to Marco Wilson and throwing the shoe for no goddamn reason.
Yeah. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Maybe he was celebrating, but and honestly, like I'm all for shoe stuff, like shenanigans with shoes. Like if there's a loose shoe on the field, like I think you should be able to pick that up and throw it wherever. But it's like you can't pull a shoe off of somebody's foot. Like that's just like that crosses the line. Yeah, I realized I just said that it was in the foot stuff on the podcast. So clip that and do whatever you want with it. But yeah, like one of my favorite plays ever is Tyson Chandler swatting a shoe into the stands when somebody was trying to put their shoe back on, or like yeah, basketball players when they lose their shoe and then another player and they're trying to put the shoe. Or they're trying to get to their shoe so they could put it back on, and then another player gets to it first and then chucks it out of bounds. That's always hilarious. And
Yeah,
but
man,
this
you're
is
trying
not
to
a
be
time for
safe.
that. You can't do that to a shoe that's still on somebody else's foot. Like
No.
it's
I don't know, that's just weird.
that's that definitely falls into unsportsmanlike conduct. Whereas the other stuff is just strategic. Some news out of the Olympics. We always look forward to these announcements because then we get to talk about new sports. But yeah, for 2021, we've got a couple confirmed new events. I think they were announced before, but now it's kind of confirmed for 2021 and also reconfirmed for 2024. So skateboarding, sport climbing, and surfing are going to be a part of the Tokyo 2021 Olympics. Surfing is going to take place off of the coast in Japan. I think the highlight of this announcement is breakdancing getting added to the 2024 Olympics.
Yeah, I think
So
that's definitely like these are all like super interesting, and they make sense in that timeline of, well, kind of like adding things that they think the youth would be into, kind of get them into to the Olympics. But at the same time, like I think surfing is at a place where, yeah, that makes sense. Even breakdancing to a certain extent has kind of gained enough worldwide renown. Skateboarding to a certain extent still lives in this realm where sometimes it wants to be mainstream and sometimes it wants to belong to the streets in a sense. Like it in the last few years they've kind of
Well, we
so
still
that's what I
think of
was
it
going
as
to
an X
say.
Games sport,
Even
and
the X Games for most skateboarders, right, with quotation marks, most skateboarders don't go to the X Games anymore. It's too mainstream for them. It's not pure. It's not skateboarding. It's not what it is, right? It's not the tournaments at the local skate shop. It's not skateboarding for them anymore. A lot of other things now are where skateboarding has gone. A lot of, once again, quotation mark, real skaters don't go to the X Games anymore. Like, it's not that thing.
I do remember, I think when they added BMX to the Olympics, I remember watching the actual Olympic competition and realizing that they are just riding the same course over and over again. And it's like a quick course that they can kind of get through in like 15 seconds. And just seeing like, okay, what are they actually trying to show here? Because I just saw two people ride a bike across a course in 15 seconds, and that was kind of it. And then now I'm just going to watch this over and over and over again. And so, like, without having watched like the X Games version of that and having something to compare it to, like, it certainly felt like a sanitized version of the sport. And I understand, like, in trying to develop fair sporting competition, you kind of structure everything in a way that is equal and fair to both sides, and without a whole lot of potential external interference and all these things that you try to add to the competition to try to make it as fair as possible. But without having, maybe that's how the X Games version of that competition was as well.
Yeah, a lot of what has happened in recent years, as far as like what I can tell, is like you kind of go for the check, because it doesn't really give you the clout anymore, right? It doesn't give you the notoriety to go to these things like the X Games or the Olympics for skateboarders, right? The courses are considered trash. They don't correlate to the actual skill set that most of these people have outside of like vert, because you can't fuck up a vert ramp, even though there have been competitions where people have literally been like, you fucked up a vert ramp. But when it comes to like the street stuff, which is one of the big major competitions, they're always like these courses are like kiddie, right? They're courses for kids. So you don't really see an actual skill set of a BMXer or a skateboarder on these courses, because they're really bad. Like, they're just really, really bad. So the people who actually have those skill sets don't want to go and do it, because it's not fun. Like,
yeah, so I feel like, which is weird to me, because I feel like snowboarding has been very successful in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
At least, and maybe that's just because the Winter Olympics in general don't quite have the same clout as the Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
And so maybe there's just more attention on some of the smaller sports. But I think
it's also one of those things where things like skiing and all those other things have lived in that realm for so long, and snowboarding wanted that same clout. And I think what it came down to was, one time I was watching a YouTube video and somebody was talking about the course design, right? And they were like, you look at a course at whatever competition it was, I can't remember off the top of my head, and they were like, this is designed to kind of show you what you know, skating or BMXing out in the street looks like, right? And it gives people a lot of options of things to do. Whereas you look at these bigger competitions and X Games and so to speak, and people do the same tricks because that's all you can do on the courses that they design, because they're not designed by people who do these things. They're just designed by, you know, people who know how to build things, as opposed to people who know how to skate. And they're like, that's one of the problems, as opposed to like a lot of the other things in trying to be very PC. And they just mean in like the way they want people to dress and the sponsorships and like things like that, right? Because they go for the big sponsors that these kids tend to fight against, and because it's business. So it's weird. It's a weird culture thing that has a lot of weird shifts and things in it, and it fights back and forth, and it's just really weird. Like, yeah,
it seems like those sports are, or at least like the extreme sports, are the last sports where you want to see like a metagame develop. Mm-hmm. It's fine to see that in team sports, mm-hmm. because there, you know, there's all kinds of strategy and all kinds of deviation that you can get from that. But when you have like individual sports, especially ones that are supposed to be pushing boundaries, but then you give them like a single course to show their stuff on, and it's kind of a sanitized thing, and you know, at that point it's like, how you can't really do anything there that elevates your sport. It's kind of, you're just there to do like a mini showcase, but but then everybody just ends up doing the same thing, so nobody has a reason to tune in past the first event that they see,
mm-hmm.
Unless they're rooting for somebody specific.
But at the same time, like,
people, if you're saying like the big names aren't even bothering to show up, then that makes it even worse. I could see how surfing is always a little bit different, because the waves are always going to be a little bit different, But yeah, I'm a little worried about what's going to happen with the skateboarding here.
I mean, I am too. Like, I, because it's been a fight for the last few years for him. It's been quiet, but it's been a fight. So
yeah. Breakdancing, I think, is going to be interesting because I think that falls under the same thing as like gymnastics. So they could do a lot of stuff with that.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, for 2024, that Olympics is going to be held in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't really, I think the closest body of water to Paris is the English Channel. So instead, what they decided for this is they are going to hold the surfing event in Tahiti, which is on the opposite side of the fucking world from Paris. So I wonder how that's going to work out. I mean, it's probably going to work out fine, but it's just weird that like holding the game, the Olympic Games in Paris, but we're going to do the surfing part in Tahiti.
You know what? That is one of those things where, like, cool, have your host city, but if it comes down to something, especially like surfing and even skateboarding to a certain degree, right? Like, if there is a better place in the world to do it, just do it there, right? Like surfing is more about the waves and the things like that, and those things don't like the style of water that you need for surfing to exist doesn't exist everywhere, right? Like, some places are just too inland, some places are, you know, it kind of is what it is. So to have that thing be an Olympic sport, which it should be, and it is fine that it is, sometimes it just has to happen somewhere else. Yeah. And I don't think it takes away from the host city. It just, that event has to have some specifics to it.
Yeah, it's just, I think we've grown up thinking of the Olympics as like something that part of the magic of it is like everything happens in one place. Mm-hmm. You know, like all the athletes converge on one area. They do the opening ceremony together. You get to see all the athletes marching together in one place. And, you know, and then they do the closing ceremony and all that. And they all, you know, they all live in the Olympic Village together for a couple weeks. And all that's kind of going away. Like this year, they, you know, due to COVID, they've suggested that, like, don't even show up to the Olympic Village before, you know, more than 5 days before your event. And then once your event happens, once you're done competing, you got to leave within 2 days. So like, I wonder, like, the opening and closing ceremonies are probably going to be a lot different because you don't have like the parade of athletes anymore. And, so like all these traditional pageantry things are kind of going by the wayside. And so I don't know how much of that's going to carry over to 2024. But yeah, it's like, you know, if you're surfing in Tahiti, you're not going to fly all the way to Paris to participate in the opening ceremonies and then fly back to Tahiti. And so you can do your event and then fly back to Paris for the closing ceremonies. Like, that's just weird. So, so I don't know, maybe they could have picked someplace closer.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, maybe, but just maybe there is, you know what I mean? Like, maybe there isn't, they're in that time of the year. Maybe there's just not a great place to surf. Cause then like, maybe you pick somewhere closer and knowing, you know, the weather patterns, which is part of what helps create surfing. There's just not going to be good water for it. So you end up with a shitty surfing competition, you know, and it doesn't show off the sport in its best light.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you don't want it to limit like which cities can get an Olympics awarded to them because they don't necessarily, because they're not close enough to the water for that. I know for like the Winter Olympics, it's kind of hard to decide where to award the games because there's only certain places that have like bobsledding courses and mountains available for skiing. But I think they've been a little bit more relaxed on where they award some of those, just as long as they have something somewhat close by that can meet those requirements. So,
mm-hmm.
I think surfing is going to be one of those things that's always a little bit separated.
And I don't want to keep going back and forth, but one of the things I think would make some of the skateboarders very happy, right, is one, obviously let people who are good at building skate items build them. But when you go to these amazing places, rather than building some garbo street course, Why not let the skaters, which the X Games did once or twice, pick a spot in that city that is in the heart of skateboarding, and put the permits together, maybe make some safety adjustments, and let people skate those places that they skate anyway, right? Like,
yeah,
like why not do that?
Section off the downtown area and mm-hmm. or part of the downtown area and say like, you can skate on anything around here.
Mm-hmm. Like, I bet you they would love the fuck out of that. And that would bring those big names to it. Because that's what these people do anyway. They travel around the world. They find these spots. They skate them to make videos and other things and gain their name and, like, kind of claim that spot by doing the best trick they can there. Like, why not just make it official
for them? Yeah, that would be cool. Or, like, just anything that makes it so that they're not doing the same course over and over again. Like, maybe if there's like a road course there, a street course. I got to get my terms right, but maybe if there's like a street course, maybe make it so that the players can like adjust the courses a little bit and, or like challenge each other to, you arrange the course for your competitor to compete on and, or like make parts of the course interchangeable from round to round so that it's at least changed up a little bit. But yeah, if they're doing the same thing over and over again on the same street course, it's just going to get boring. So, I think the Olympic Committee is kind of playing it a little close as far as adding new things. They rejected ocean rowing, as like a modification to their existing rowing events. They've, rejected parkour, which I think would have been a modification to gym. I think it falls under gymnastics.
It could. Yeah.
So, so they haven't added that yet, but I think, we might be seeing those on the horizon as a potential new sports. So be on the lookout for that. It's nice to see the Olympics wanting to change things up a little bit and attract different audiences. Boxing is kind of on the ropes a little bit, and so is weightlifting. Some of that is down to the governing bodies struggling to get their shit together, and some of it is down to lack of control around performance enhancing drugs. So
yeah.
We've already seen baseball get kicked out in our lifetime. So like, you know, it's no sport that's not very well run is safe at this point.
yeah.
All right. That's the end of our show this week. Thank you all for listening. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com if you want links to these stories. We've got them in the show notes. We also have links to iTunes and Google Podcasts and other places where you can subscribe to this show. Thank you to all of you who subscribe and listen every week. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to all of you guys who do that as well. You guys help keep this show going. Hit us up on Twitter at I'm at JVZ, Kaz is at King Kaz, DJM is at Call Me DJM, and the show account is at Sports Odds Ends if you want to hit us up on Twitter. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.